the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. This is number 118. My name is Joey. That is Len, and we like eating our pizza out of coal ovens. What's going on over there, buddy? How are you?
Coal, wood burning, whatever. It's something like that, something old fashioned, and that I could get the taste from the fire. Yeah, so I'm good, Joey. I'm very, very good. It's very, very busy here in my fiat mining life, which, yeah. Oh man. It's a whatever, it is what it is. Closer to the end than the beginning. That's all I got to say with respect to that. How are you over there, Joey?
Busy. As you can see, I'm in a new seat here at my kitchen table. There's fake fruit right here, which is good, an indicator that we're close to the end of this whole sale process. Sign is on the lawn, everything good, everything great. I don't have anything to hold my mic on because these chairs are not mine, so I don't want to ruin the finish with the clamp. So I'll be holding my mic today, like the budget podcast we are. So anyway, man,
like Rogan after the match, you're going up to the fighter and asking him a question. So, yeah, so that's what it seems like to me. But anyway,
we're good. So lots to talk about tonight. Maybe before we even start there, let's go back to the last week on CBP and maybe talk about what's coming this week too, so, because we haven't been doing that. We got a lot going on. Last week you had Nick, Nobody Caribou, on the show Wednesday night. Great interview. Everyone should go check that out if they haven't already. I was on Money Talks this week for close to 20 minutes with Mike Campbell talking about the state of things in the crypto space and how Bitcoin is different. I really appreciate Mike, you know, continuing to ask me on and also clarifying that Bitcoin and crypto are not the same, which is great. I love to hear that, especially from a guy with his level of experience in the financial markets. This week, tomorrow night, I have football at 6:30. So the stream is at 9 with Luke Broyles. That'll be good. The case for Bitcoin, we'll be talking about that. And then Wednesday, one of us will be talking to Natalie Smolensky. Thursday, nothing right now, but if we can swing it, I might try and do Frank Holmes, CEO of Hive, on Thursday. I have to talk to his people. His people have been asking for him to come on, and we want to talk to him. They have some news coming out shortly, I believe this week or next. So we want to talk to him. Actually, that news came out
at the Canadian Bitcoin Conference.
That news came out today. They bought a fuck ton of miners for submersion and deployment in some of their facilities. So that's, you know, maybe for Thursday. We are busy as all hell on this program. And then, of course, we always have Axis of Easy too. Len and I talking about the latest in, what is it? What do I say? Data breaching, overreaching.
Yeah. And generally stuff to do with privacy, security, network tech, breaches, tech.
It's very good. That's a good companion show. I knew it would be good when we started doing it, but I find often that it does like sort of tickle my memory for stuff that we talked about on the CBP and vice versa when we do Access of Easy. So
Boomer's asking when we're doing 5 days a week, man. Not in the very near future, especially
not on purpose. We're already close, man. We're close already.
Well, I'm sure this is an odd week, and especially during summertime, it's very rare we're this active with the show. Three times a week is probably our average.
I haven't even told Len this either. I might actually be at the cottage on Monday night. So, I don't know yet. Depending on the condition of my dog, who is, you know, sort of on the decline here, poor guy. But yeah, I mean, Len,
I'll be taking
to your point about before you go on about the number of days Jordab in the chat making a comment that I think was worth talking about. Do you remember when I didn't want to do 2 days a week when we first started the show? And now literally people are banging on our door to record and stream every night, guests and viewers alike. It's quite a change.
Yeah, well, it's a we're all developing and changing our approaches and stuff like that. But so yeah, well, this is a shocker to me for Monday, so I'm gonna have to start taking names.
I don't know for sure yet. We'll see how it goes.
So whoever donates the most stats to me is gonna be top of the list. So
well, Monday's a holiday, right? So maybe I can be back by 7 o'clock on Monday night. That shouldn't be a problem.
Depending on traffic.
I gotta talk to my wife. Well, we don't leave. We usually leave pretty early. We try and get out of the cottage pretty early there. So let's I guess we'll get into it here. Maybe the sponsors. Easy DNS, Mark and team, incredible over there at Easy DNS. So if you need domain hosting, virtual private server, you want to move your email over, Mark and his guys will help you with that. It's a great, great company. We've obviously been friends with Mark for a long time. He was on the show a few times, including a co-host appearance, I believe, before Easy DNS became a sponsor. We are confident that if you use Easy DNS for any of those things, whether you buy them a la carte or whether you buy them in a package, you're going to love the quality of service you get from Mark and the guys. So if you want to use them, CBP Media, that's the promo code. I know a bunch of you guys have used their services already. I can see actually a couple people in the chat who've talked to me or talked to Len. And Len, I know of one other guy who's thinking about switching over there briefly or switching over there in a short period of time as well. So anyway, CBP Media, tell Mark we sent you. Support those guys. Also, AccessVZ, obviously, I don't want to plug that other show. You know, we don't get anything special for that. But I do like, you know, supporting Mark and the team over there any way we can. So, yeah, give them a look. And CBP Media, half off. I believe half off your initial purchase, which is pretty
simple. That is correct.
You don't get that too many places. CBP, you get it.
No, unless you're in the States, then you could get a lot of things just free, depending which department store or supermarket you walk in, and obviously depending on the state you're in as well. But yeah, so 50% off is definitely a good deal. But another good deal is getting on Bull Bitcoin and use our referral code below. And once you fund your account, you're going to get $20 added to your account. $20 or $21. I always hear the two different numbers.
It's so. $21. You get $1 for funding the account to $100. Uh-huh. Which is the minimum buy, and then 20 for using our code. So $21 on the house, 20% on your first $100 buy. You can't beat that. Where can you get that? That's better than anything else out there, man.
Yeah, I agree. And you could get KYC free Bitcoin if you just sign up correctly and you go to Canada Post to fund your account. It's all KYC. It's non-custodial. You can buy, sell your Bitcoins. They had LCAD no longer.
Had it.
Yes, had it. So it's, they no longer have to scratch that. But they have liquid Bitcoin. They have Lightning. So you could buy straight from with Canadian dollars and get either of those two products. You could buy and sell your Bitcoin. I think I already mentioned that. You could do gift cards.
Bills.
Bills. You could live on a Bitcoin standard. But not only that, you could do it just about anywhere in Canada, even in Dildo. You could go to freaking Dildo. You could exchange your dirty fiat currency and get KYC free Bitcoin.
Sick.
I love that.
You can't beat that.
We got to do our own show at Dildo. One day we got to go for a long drive out there.
How far is that? That's pretty far, eh? Got to be.
Well, Newfoundland is a long ways away from here.
You know, that's more than a weekend road trip there, buddy.
I think it's more than that. Yeah, well, we could schedule a 3-week journey and go out there and meet the good folks over there. It's a small community from what I understand. And but I do have one other thing I just wanted to knock off my list of things to do, because we are listed as a sponsor of this event in Regina. Jaime Garcia has set up this new event that's taking place. It's the Regina Bitcoin Summer Meetup, and it's taking place on July 25th from 7 to 10 p.m. local time over there, of course. And the first 21 people who RSVP will get their first round of drinks purchased from people all the way from Germany, courtesy of Cedor. So you could just RSVP. There's a QR code. Check it out. Jaime Garcia has this on his feed on Twitter. So if you're in the Regina region or going to be flying in sometime around July 25th, check it out. It's going to be a good Bitcoin meetup. And we're one of the official sponsors, so check it out.
How did we get – Jaime's been so great to us, man. We should also mention that before I forget, he shared with us the curriculum for his course. And I don't know if we ever shared it on Twitter. Did we? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Twitter and YouTube. So it's been okay. And Noster as well.
Perfect. That's great. Okay. Well, if that's all we have for housekeeping, let's pull up the price of Bitcoin here. The price is 30,210 US. Not bad, man. Not bad.
Well, in Canadian, it's 39,744. We are above the 40,000 threshold. But we still, there's one thing I want to rhyme
boost.
Off.
You got the boost here?
Yeah, so before I even go into the booster, something I want to mention. There was a bug in Fountain. So we had split set up in the past with one of our listeners who was getting married sometime last year, and also Bitcoin Ikasi. And lately, the splits were 0% for each of them. Mm. From what I understand, people have been boosting us, but I noticed my dollar, my wallet doesn't match up what's been boosted to me. So I reached out to Fountain. Apparently, there's a bug. And the bug is that even though I had it set at zero, sats were still being streamed to the two people, Bitcoin Ikasi and that listener from our show for quite some time. I guess to the tune of tens, if not hundreds of thousands of sats. So just because I feel bad that the Bitcoin Defense Fund and me, Premier Bitcoin, may get ripped off from all this, I'm going to just donate whatever I have in my wallet of Satoshi to each of the two. So I'm going to divide it by two. It's going to be a little over 100,000 sats each. And that's from the proceeds of the sale of the shirt that we got, and also what I get boosted on Noster as well. So I'm going to try to divvy it up. It's going to be, there's the number. I'm going to divide it in half. So each of them are going to get that too, plus the what I have in my Fountain account, which is a little over 10,000 sats. So I'm just going to divide it up and give it up to both of those two. Anyways, Owen boosts us. Great chat. This is with respect to Nick, Nobody Caribou. Bitcoin had a profound effect on my mental health. And I put that down to a change of mindset. Green pilling is an immensely important thing. Keeping Soul Freedom, S-O-L-E, freedom.ca in my back pocket for next time. I just bought some natural shoes and got dinged for $70 at delivery. Not very good at all, but you know what? Soulfreedom.com, .ca may be your key to getting some cheaper natural shoes. And Mo BTC Dick writes in, thanks for what you did, Mr. Caribou. I'm sure he's a very thankful for you reaching out and saying thank you for him. Rander writes in, thank you, Joey and Len, for having Nobody Caribou on the pod. I love everything he has to say about the convoy and how he devoted himself to helping the truckers, also while trying to spread the Bitcoin message. Inspirational. Let's see what else. North Star Chris, this is a good one. Was privileged to be part of my first Bitcoin course. This is the one that Jaime was administering. Very diverse background of attendees. Jaime was a great instructor. Hopefully, even though the class is done, we have regular Bitcoin meetups. This is great. So one of the few attendees that attended is listening to our show, which is amazing. Owen boosts 10,000 sats. And this is how he noticed there was a bug in my system here. Always great content. Joey bang on with his closing rant. Love my CBP shirt, by the way, wearing it as we speak. And Dallas boosts 1,000 sats. I'm glad to hear the conference went well. It went fantastic. Rander writes in, I freaking died when Joey called Apple CEO Tim Apple. Laugh out loud, it's Tim Cook. I love that name, Tim Apple.
That's the old Trump thing, right? He called them Tim Apple, I think, in one of his press conferences. Yeah, amazing.
It was funny, though. It was funny. So, and Doug and Roop writes in, I'm working on a paper title, Casual Relationships Between National Pigmentation and Solar Farm Efficiency. We'll be submitting to your journal soon. Love this. They also pay the Scottish wind farms to turn off when it's too windy. That's incredible. I'm not going to lie. Crazy. Those Brits are not going to make it. Back boosting, baby. This is with respect to solar farms in Britain not being efficient during high temperatures.
If it's too hot,
And I was saying people were taking off their shirts and I don't want to go there. Anyways. Let's go right into it, Joey, unless there's anything else you want to talk about. I see you're just playing with your mic, so maybe it's just better. I can't hear you. You're off. I'll go into it. Sorry, until you're still off, buddy.
Oh, man.
I can hear you, but you're distant now. So that mic is looks like it's kaput. Anyways, this is technical difficulties on the fly. No worries. Well, first thing, let's do some Bitcoin-related news and institutional news that have some ties to Bitcoin. And there's a lot of things going on. And I know we'll talk about ETFs in a bit. But before I do, I just want to make mention of something that may have slipped through the cracks, something called EDX Markets. Have you even – you can nod, Joey, if you want. Have you heard of EDX Markets? Okay, no, he's not shaking his head. This is the first of its kind. It's a digital asset marketplace designed to enable safe and compliant trading for digital assets through trusted intermediaries. So it's a traditional exchange model. Think of like any other exchange that you know about. This is going to be providing customers, which are institutional, the ability to buy stuff like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash. Notably, I don't think any of these things, and for sure Bitcoin, I know, but the other three, I don't think has been targeted by the SEC. So they're picking, they're handpicking certain products they want to sell on their platform. So as I mentioned, the EDX, it's backed by Citadel, Fidelity, and Charles Schwab, and a few others. So some big players here. And they say they're going to have no direct retail accounts. So people like you and I, Joey, and others listening to the show, wouldn't be able to take advantage of this. This is strictly for customers that are institutional. They have to meet certain criteria in order to qualify. And in fact, they're saying right now that they currently have less than 100 customers altogether. So a very exclusive group. Interesting to note here is that it's self-custody. And the reason why I say this is interesting is because back in October 2022, there was news that EDX was going to use Paxos as its custodian. So back in October, it seemed like to me, based on a news release, it would be custodial type in exchange model, but they've switched it to be self-custody, non-custodial. So really cool to see that this is morphed. But I think that a lot of it has to do with Paxos. Paxos, remember, it has very strong ties to BUSD. That's the Binance stablecoin. And we remember that the SEC has went out and they filed a lawsuit against Binance, well, at least Binance US. So anyways, with respect to this EDX, they have claims that this satisfies the regulatory's thoughts and concerns. So this is an interesting move by some very big players, Citadel, Fidelity, Charles Schwab, that they're going to allow people to buy, customers, that institutional customers, buy in, but it's going to be self-custody. This I like because it gives these institutions the ability to understand what is Bitcoin. Not just buying it, number go up, but actually holding on to it and understanding the fundamentals surrounding it.
I said this on Mike's show that the Bitcoin ETF has the potential to be kind of a top of funnel moment for a lot of investors, even though there's no custodial option and likely no claim on actual physical Bitcoin. I doubt very much you can convert your ETF holdings to BTC in an actual UTXO. It seems unlikely, but this is great to hear. Also, Len, like I just want to point out that although the crypto bros have been quick to lump this in with, you know, institutions getting into crypto, I was listening to Bankless on the weekend, and those guys, it's one of them was away. I don't know which teary-eyed cuck took the weekend off, but they were talking about how institutions are arriving at crypto all at the same time, and there's going to be a DeFi summer coming up here because the you know, regulatory clarity. It's ridiculous. There's no chance that this is true, right? And so these guys are all just, they're spinning their wheels, making shit up and coping. And to hear that there's opportunities now for not only an ETF for retail coming down the pipeline, I don't know exactly when that'll be, probably months away, but still very unlikely that BlackRock ETF is dismissed or denied. The idea that you can also do self-custody if you're a major player, that's huge. It's not quite as cool as, you know, a giant family office or a giant hedge fund buying and just like throwing it on a cold card in a safe somewhere. That would be really cypherpunk, really dope. But this is a close second. So I'm happy to see this, man. And companies, you know, kudos to companies like Unchained Capital, even Casa. I know they do ETH now too, but these companies have been around for a long time on the back of helping people take custody and being ready for institutional entrance into the ecosystem that require different levels of security because of board requirements and because of other requirements to come along with being, you know, perhaps publicly traded or perhaps, you know, a hedge fund or whatever. It's great to see that those companies now are basically being proven right. Like that model is being proven to be to have been correct the entire time. It took a little bit for everyone to come along, but here we are now. There's no doubt that this is coming at this point. You know what I really want to know, Len? And you might have this in another story, I'm not sure. I want to know how Gensler feels after his like public appreciation tour where he felt he should be appreciated, I'm sure, talking about Coinbase and Binance and the nature of, you know, potential scams in the crypto space. And now here's BlackRock showing up at the door going, yeah, we want a Bitcoin ETF and we're going to get it. And we don't care what you think about it. And we don't care how many others you denied. We own the U.S. government. We own the U.S. banking sector. We have $10 trillion under management. We own the majority share of almost every equity worth a penny on the U.S. S&P 500. And we're going to get what we want. It's going to be a real power move, right? Like bend the knee. We are the ones who are actually in charge. You guys like Gensler won't have a publicity tour to carry out after that. It's really interesting to watch all this stuff unfold. also would point out that in terms of the custody thing you mentioned, you know, is there going to be a push at some point? And I think I said this on our show last week, but I'll say it again. Is there going to be a push at some point for people who buy that ETF to have a custody option, to have a claim to UTXOs in actual Bitcoin if they buy the ETF? What do you think? Is that something that's going to be possible?
Maybe possible. Will there be a push for it? Probably not. I think more people are just going to be happy they could get direct exposure to the price of Bitcoin in like their 401ks or even institutions just buying and holding on to the ETF like that. So I probably don't think there'll be a push, although there should be, but unfortunately I don't think it's going to be in the cards.
Yeah.
But
interesting all the same though. Like there's barely any bad news in Bitcoin this week. Everything is just rosy. Everything looks good. Most of the time we at least have like regulatory lack of clarity to talk about, but I don't even think we have that anymore. Like we're not going to have a show in a year if this keeps up.
No. There's still, I mean, before I just wanted to say one thing, somebody in the comments, the P-Man Van, he said he wrote the intro song for Marty Bent's new show called The Last Trade. That is so cool that he's the person that was responsible for writing that, the intro song. Just wanted to give him a plug for that. But there is some news out there that is not the greatest, because you look at there's this new ETF, BitX. It's starting trading tomorrow. It's going to be a 2x Bitcoin strategy
leverage
ETF.
Leverage futures, right? Is that the one?
Yes. Like, what is this? Leverage futures versus a spot ETF that's going to be approved beforehand? Like, there is a somewhat equivalent. I mean, it's not quite a direct apples to apples. In Canada, we have HBIT and BITI. But that is the ProShares, Beta Pro, whatever the heck it's called. And it's not a leveraged, sorry, it is leveraged from what I understand, but it's not a futures-based thing. So it's just odd that the SEC would be approving these leverage future trades, leverage future ETFs before a spot ETF. From what I understand, they rejected 28 different ETF, Bitcoin ETFs, 28. It's not like it's a small number. And some big players, Valkyrie, just announced they assigned they filed for an ETF as well under ticker BRRR, BRRR. But WisdomTree, they filed again. Kathy Woods, ARK, filed again. These are all like just reapplications. They filed them in the past. It's just, so to see this happen again and again, it makes me wonder, like, this, maybe they got wind that something like this is going to be approved, but I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at this, it seems odd, but there is something here. The BITO, BITO futures ETF that was approved a year or two ago by the SEC, I think it was last year, it's been noted that they have the biggest weekly inflow in a year. It hit $1 billion in assets. So even though there's no Bitcoin spot ETF, still there is money flowing into this futures ETF, the BITO. So somebody's taking notice of what's going on in the markets and is acting upon it. Not only that, GBTC, the premium or discount, it's a discount right now, but it went negative back in February 2021, but it's staging a comeback. And the last thing, it was around 30% last I saw yesterday. This is the highest it's been since September 2022. So it's getting close to a year, 9 months after. So it's, things are trending in the right direction. But again, we have nothing guaranteed going forward. The SEC could still say no to any one of these applications. Probably not, given who's involved now, but you know, who the heck knows. But also, I just want to, one last thing, Deutsche Bank they also applied for a Bitcoin ETF spot exchanges and spot trading in Germany. So there's going to be a flood of this moving forward, not just in the US, but also in other countries. So expect to see a lot of institutional capital coming into Bitcoin. Should institutions have any capital left, what's going on with the economy these days? But there's an opportunity now for money to flow in. And I hope they learn, though, that just buying an ETF is not the best way to get into Bitcoin. I know for institutions that they're dealing with different set of rules and regulations. I would like to see if they could go more of the Michael Saylor approach, the MicroStrategy approach, where they can actually buy the asset, put it on their balance sheet, and keep the keys and somehow ensure that they have access to it. But I still think MicroStrategy, that they have it in some custodial. I don't know who's doing it, but I think that's
they're using it, right? They're using it. I think Saylor take a little bit of shit a year ago because he was using some of it for yield. I think he was, right? I believe.
Is that it?
I can't remember, or using this collateral for another loan. I forget what he's doing. But
That's fine. It's an asset.
Different story there. Yeah.
It's an asset. But yeah, it just, there's going to be a lot of movement moving forward in this whole sphere. And some of it good. And we talked about our, I guess we had some differing opinions last week, but still movement. This, it's going to have a lot of impact with the price. So expect some price action moving forward. And if you think it's going to stay here in the low 30s or high 20s forever, think again, because when number starts moving up, there's going to be a lot of people looking at it and trying to ride a wave to get some extra fiat dollars in the whole process. And that's probably not the best way to look at it, but that's just the reality of it.
Yeah, you and I have been talking about this for a long time, that institutions were going to eventually make their way here, because as Preston Pish and others are, you know, have been pointing out for a long time now, longer than 2 years in his case, the traditional vehicles that institutions are looking at to preserve wealth aren't really working that well. And so I know there's a case to be made that maybe these guys are just coming in because it's a way to scalp fees and people want exposure, blah, blah, blah. I understand that. And that's okay. That's part of market structure in the modern world. But I would also just suggest that there's at least some potential that they understand that there's failures in traditional vehicles. And I would prefer to view it that way. Narwhal's in the chat making a good point. If BlackRock is smart, and they are, they're already buying Bitcoin to meet customer demand so they don't get oversubscribed and have to chase the price hyperbolically up. That's a decent point, actually. And I'd be curious about what they're doing. Now, I guess the other question, Len, in terms of, you know, whether they rehypothecate, I know people have been pointing out that the fork, you know, clause in the contract is a bit weird. I have on, you know, pretty good legal, not legal advice, but legal opinion on Twitter from a number of guys, including Joe Carlisari, that, you know, those forms about forks and things like that, those are just people doing everything they can to do all the CYA possible before they, you know, go to market with an ETF product. It's not necessarily, you know, indicative of what their plans are. They're going to go with the shittier fork or try to fork Bitcoin. No, it doesn't really mean that. I know a lot of people are complaining about that, but to Narwhal's point, and the question I want to ask, because they'll be operating in Texas and other states that have this proof of reserves requirement, they're going to have to show that they have all the Bitcoin that they're claiming they have, right? That's probably going to be a requirement for them in some parts of the United States and maybe abroad as well.
If they do it, great. It should put to rest some questions that they have the Bitcoin on hand. And personally, I'm going to use the ETFs in Canada as the example. Maybe I'm naive in my approach here, but I think that whatever they say they have, the ETFs have in terms of Bitcoin, they have it. I can't see them not having that. So I'm going to assume that BlackRock is going to operate in the same vein, that if they say they have 50,000 Bitcoin under management, that they have 50,000 Bitcoin under management. I have no reason to believe that they wouldn't. So if the proof of reserves give people a little more peace of mind, so be it. And whatever. Joey, though, there's still more to talk about. We haven't talked about Ledger. I'll be brief on this one because Ledger has been quiet for some time. But you know what? They're back in the news. Somebody noted that Ledger Live, and Ledger Live is the closed source program that Ledger is issued to users to connect to their Ledger wallet. Well, somebody noted when Ledger Live doesn't update, it does a naughty thing in the process. It writes the XPub on the disk in plain text, not encrypted in any way, and it's not wiping it. It's not sweeping it once the update is completed. It's just there ready for anybody or anything to take advantage and look at it. That is, in my opinion, that's just another example why Ledger is shitty software, shitty hardware, shitty everything. This is stuff you should stay away from. And XPub sharing that is just basically opening the doors for having anybody identify where the money's coming, well, where the Bitcoin's coming from in terms of its belongings, especially if it's been KYC before. Anything moving forward, if it's not KYC, it's just, you're just mixing and matching the shit. Even if you're doing some, even if you're doing UTXO management, it's gone. It's forget about it. Once they give up the XPub and somebody is able to look at it, it's done at that point. So that's foolish, man. To have that on a disk in plain text, I think that I don't even know how to say like that. That's just bloody.
It's lazy. It's lazy more than anything, right? Like the problem with Ledger, isn't even that the hardware is bad. Like, you know, we all had ledgers at some point, and the hardware, in my opinion, is fine. Like, it's well made. My ledger probably still works. God knows I haven't plugged it in forever. But the problem with Ledger Live is that it's the interface to use the hardware. No one who buys a ledger is going to Sparrow to use the hardware. They could, but they don't. And the reason they don't is because it's kind of entry-level hardware, entry-level user interface. And you know, we've talked before on the show about how they encourage you to buy, you know, NFTs and stake and all this other shit that in that, you know, Ledger Live interface. You can agree or disagree with all that. You can agree or disagree with the, you know, idea that users should be onboarded to something that, you know, is easy but has tons of unannounced trade-offs. That's all debatable stuff. But what's not debatable is that XPub should be pushed plain text onto your computer. This is lazy. It's lazy. And Pascal is on all these podcasts, or was on all these podcasts, talking about how they take security seriously. And the you know, whatever that was, the splitting of the key and sending it encrypted to three different people or whatever, that was just another example of them taking security seriously for average people. How hard is it to write something that makes sure that XPubs are at the very least encrypted, you know, in a maybe a better circumstance, not recorded or transcribed at all? It's lazy, man. It's lazy. And the worst part, Len, again, discovered by somebody else, not a announcement from Ledger, right? Someone else found this out. And just over and over again, these guys really showing you what's up. I don't often get behind you on, you know, the whole Peter McCormick giving air to bad companies. I think everyone has had that problem. You know, Marty and Matt did Compass for a while, et cetera, et cetera. But dude, for him to still be promoting Ledger devices after the last month is truly also, in my opinion, lazy and only about the money. It's really shitty, because he's a podcast people listen to when they come to the space. He's maybe the first thing that comes up if you type, you know, Bitcoin podcast, the him or Bankless, right? And for him to be advertising that, like, it's just, it fucking sucks. It really sucks. It's going to cost people, I think, at some point.
It may, yeah, and wow, we're actually seeing eye to eye on that one. That's interesting. And the one
I can't not see eye to eye now, because that, like, how many more times you got to touch a stove and get burned here? It's one thing if it happens with a sponsor, and later you drop the sponsor, right? Like, you know, Compass would be an example. With
yes,
he drops them, or they split up, or whatever. Fine.
Yes.
But like Ledger, you're doubling and tripling down here on a company that doesn't seem to care about user security, and to me, that's unforgivable. We would never do that. Other podcasts would never do that. But him, with the largest audience, you know, presumably has sponsors knocking at his door down that are of higher quality. He refuses to get off this horse. It doesn't make sense to me, unless it's all about the money. And I fear that's what it is.
And the one I'm going to use as the example is BlockFi. Before it went under, he was still shilling it. So I'm not going to, the shilling it is not a big thing. Like that, you know, it didn't go under the time he was shilling it. But the one that really irks me is that he pulled out his money. He pulled out all his assets from BlockFi and was still talking about it. If you're not going to use the product, man, oh man, like, come on. But I don't want to talk about him or his show too much, because there's so much more to talk about. Which, another thing is interesting is the hash rate. I just took a look right now at the mempool from my node, by the way, so I'm not using the one online. It was at 400 exahash per second, and it was continuously for a few days. Now it's under. It's 376. So what I was going to talk about when it was over 400, let's just assume it's still over 400. There's been a lot of equipment being plugged in on the system. Some thing, some countries, someone, who the heck knows, or a bunch of one people are doing it. People are seeing that there's value here to monetize electricity, and they're doing it just by strictly plugging in more miners. The price of Bitcoin has gone up, but it's still not to the point where it's very lucrative to mine with a lot of this equipment. So I think there's a lot of companies out there that are very bullish on Bitcoin. They see the long-term potential here, and they're plugging in their equipment before the halving takes place. Man, this is cool stuff to see how much more equipment gets plugged in, because to me, that's indicative that a lot of businesses are putting their money where their mouth is, and that's cool.
Yeah, you know that even with the price in the tank for the last year and all the regulatory issues and all the blowups, you know that the number of exahash on the network is almost on a double. It's 200 up to, I think, what is it, 355 or 375 now, something like that. I got to look here. I have my pool. That space always open. Yeah, 376 exahash. This time last year, it was, you know, about 200. So it's crazy, man, to see like the difference in conviction. again, like, it's funny because you and me talk about this sometimes with guests or with other people in their lives, like even at the conference from time to time with people who are newer in the Bitcoin. Having conviction in 2017-18 when the price went from 20 to 3,000, no one knew what this thing was. The hardware wallets were just starting to roll out for public use. There was no like quality pod, like Marty and Matt were doing their show and a few other people, Pierre and Bitstein and others. But like there was so little certainty that this would ever work. All this stuff was still like completely fresh for most of the investing public. And even a lot of Bitcoiners were going through stuff for the first time. Block wars were fresh off the block size wars. We were still talking about Lightning and was yet to be implemented. Coinbase was ninja launching stuff like Bcash, trying to take Bitcoin out of the legs. All this stuff was going on. And at that time, Xhash was still rising on the network. Now to see a double over the last year when all this other nonsense is happening, you got to feel good about this. Even before BlackRock, before institutions, before the SEC basically saying that everything except Bitcoin is a security or a, you know, unregistered security, you got to feel good about this. It's hard not to have conviction now. And you know, I don't want to jump over you on the no-coiner, but like listening to Nassim Taleb talk about how his only argument against Bitcoin is that what? It's a cult. It's speculative. It's like there's no good arguments. I'm sure there are some. We've yet to hear them, of course, but there's less and less quality discussion about the downsides of Bitcoin or the speculative nature of Bitcoin or the staying power of Bitcoin, and now even the legality and legitimacy of Bitcoin in the investing space. This is like truly a difficult time to not have conviction. I don't understand why anyone would be averse to owning 1% or 5% or 10%, you know, at least of their savings or their investing portfolio in Bitcoin, except because they're too proud to admit they made a mistake. It'll be the worst and final error you make as an investor and saver. And it's unbelievable, but it seems to be the only thing left.
I could give you a couple of bear cases. It's untested. That's number one. We don't have a wide scale test of how Bitcoin would operate replacing the existing system. So it's all just theoretical at this stage. And the second is if there's regional blackouts because of, for whatever reason, and because of that,
if it gets too sunny, you mean, and the power goes out?
No, I mean, I'm thinking more, that may be one, but if there's an attack on a grid, for instance, and you have a wide area of a like a population just get knocked out, or even just the communications get knocked off, I could see then you could have two different chains being done, like in different parts of the world. Like you'd have different chains being mined because they just don't have connectivity to each other. So what would happen when it's then connected again? And just some things I can't figure out technically if once it's rolled out on a bigger scale, because there's still, it's not truly proven because it hasn't been done yet. So that is my bear case, but the other side has too many bear cases to say that we should continue on with it. It's just, it's a fucking shit show. Yeah. And Taleb is not my no-coiner of the week, by the way.
Well, wow. Surprised to hear that.
You could keep him. And yeah. Anyways.
Okay.
Prime Trust. We talked about last week, Prime Trust. And this is the custodian of digital assets that seemingly was going to go tits up. And BitGo came to the rescue with a preliminary deal to buy them out. Well, that agreement went nowhere. BitGo made the hard decision to terminate the acquisition of Prime Trust, which is interesting because once this news hit the wire, Prime Trust then halted all deposits and withdrawals. And this is thanks to a June 21st cease and desist order from Nevada, the state of Nevada. And it's noted that the financial conditions has deteriorated to a critically deficient level. Those are very damning words. It's also noted that the balance that they have is negative $12 million of stockholders' equity in their position. So where did all the assets go? When people put their digital assets on their platform, presumably to be held, where the hell did it go? I would love to know because it's like a black hole. Like negative $12 million? Like what the fuck's going on? Like, man, oh man. This, again, not your keys, not your coins. This is another example of that.
It's funny. We talked about this last week. I think I was mentioning that somebody on another show had brought up this possibility that once the books were open to potential buyers, the deal would fall through. Of course, like the, you know, and you know, part of the Nevada cease and desist was that they knew they were basically insolvent, incapable of meeting consumer or customer claims for weeks by the sounds of things. So I'm not surprised to see this. What I am surprised about is that Prime Trust is, again, a copy and paste, or I should say Fortress Trust, which is the new custodian for some of these guys who got away from Prime Trust, is a copy paste with some of the same people who founded Prime Trust at the helm of the new operation. Why would you use this custodian if you didn't have to? I don't understand. You're asking for trouble, and I don't want to pick on Swan, but Swan is using Fortress Trust, I believe, as others maybe as well. I'm not sure exactly who else will be using them, but you know, I wouldn't feel good about that if I was a customer of Swan. I know Swan is a, you know, solid company run by solid Bitcoiners. Corey, of course, you know, one of our favorites, and he's been on this program before. But you know, no matter how many times they tell you you shouldn't keep your coins on Swan, you should take them off, blah, 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 I get it. But like, why use a company that has ties and potentially is like just a copy paste platform from this now defunct custodian? I don't understand. You got to come up with a better solution. There's no excuse now, Len. Like I was saying before, this stuff has been around for long enough now. And Bull Bitcoin, you know, did this, and they're a much smaller outfit than Swan. Why can't you build all your own services? Why can't you build out your custody platform? Why can't you build out your back end? Why can't you do all that stuff, right? There's not many companies that have done this. I'm unclear as to why they haven't at this stage. The risks are so great using third parties. It just doesn't make sense to me, especially as you grow in size and have more and more customers. I just think it's way too dicey to go this route.
It's noted in the chat we're in, it's because they're going public. That's what's been mentioned many times. And because of this, they have different goals and their agenda is slightly different than, say, Bull Bitcoin, which is 100% not privately owned and will remain so. And in fact, Bull, it was mentioned, Francis, when he came on, everything that they're doing, they're using profits from what they gather to help build up the product moving forward. Yeah. So there's no VC money coming in. So it's all just being done internally. Swan has a different way of doing things. I'm not going to say it's better or worse. I'm just saying it's different. Everybody's going to have to.
Yeah. Guillaume in the chat there, who works for Bull, saying even CipherNode is open source. Yeah, man. Like the things you can do, again, like I haven't seen the wallet on my phone yet, the new Bull stuff. And I'm not just saying this because they're a sponsor of the show. I would be using it anyways, but this is what you can do if you are a focused group with all your backend built out custom to make it so that your platform does the things you want your platform to do. It doesn't make sense to me for Swan. I know the IPO is part of that equation, but like, come on, they can't have thought about this and decided to go with copy paste stuff, given the background and the risks that are present in the ecosystem. To me, it just doesn't make sense. I can't get my head around it.
Well, if you had to trust one product, would you trust something called Prime or Fortress? I don't care if it's copy and paste. Fortress just sounds so much better
name. Better name. 3.505.
Yeah, so you know, you got to use that meme from Fry. Take my money and just do with his opening his wallet. Anyways, good show, Futurama, by the way. Underrated show, in my opinion. Domus, well, they're back in the news today. It looks like they're getting removed from the App Store. Even there was some back and forth with hopes that they may be staying on. And it's because that Apple thinks that, it's content that is being sold. That's what Apple is under the belief. And users are only able to tip after the posts are made. This is the way it is right now. It's too bad that it's going to this point that Domus is now going to be removed from Apple. And there's a whole bunch of people on Nostr that are pissed off with Apple. But I just want to note something. Like, Apple charges, everybody's aware, at 30% Apple tax. Google also has the same tax too, by the way. Oh. And Google offers its own in-app billing system that charges 30% commission or service fees on any payment made for an app or in-app payments or subscriptions. So this, what Apple's doing right now to Domus, Google could do the exact same thing to anything that's on their Play Store. But you could sideload stuff with APKs. But I'm just trying to say what Apple is doing, Google is probably going to do the same thing moving forward. I suspect that they're going to want to have their slice of the pie moving forward as well. Just people have to take precautions and figure out what's best for them. And a lot of people are jumping on Graphene OS. In fact, I got to do a video on how to install it and uninstall it because I have an extra phone here that has Graphene. I'm going to be lending it out to somebody I know, and he wants to play around with it. But anyways, Apple is bad. Google is equally as bad. Let's not praise Google. They're fucking just as bad as well. But it's too bad that they're drawing the line in the sand. And it's all because of Bitcoin zaps. Like, what the fuck, man? These are just small amounts of payment and they're just tips. That's all it is. It's a fucking tip. That's the way I look at it. Well, sorry. Anyways.
Wow, unbelievable there. Get so upset. If you're on YouTube, let's say you're watching this show on your phone and you do a super chat, does Apple take a cut of that?
I don't know. I honestly
like that's close to the same thing, right? Like something is said that you like, you reward the producer of said content, whether it's video or text or whatever. In the case of Domus, it'd be text, of course, or maybe pictures or whatever. And then you give them, you remunerate them somehow for the effort, and you agree with them or whatever. Does Apple take a cut of that? There's no end to where this could go for Apple. And the thing that's clearly an issue, and the guys from Domus say this too, I saw Will talking about this on Twitter today, the rules being selectively applied, period. And we said this too. There's a clear issue here that Apple has, and it's that it's basically impossible. First of all, it's basically impossible to measure how much value is going through the system, right? Which is a problem for them, I believe. And then the other piece is that it's not the US currency. And I think that Apple's got, an incentive to kind of keep the status quo when it comes to the currency. Domus is such a small part in that. I don't think it's worth, putting up this wall, but they're going to do it. And the other thing too, that people don't really take into account is that as soon as you start letting Bitcoin payments go through untaxed by the Apple, gods, you really are setting a dangerous precedent if you're Apple. Famously, the Apple App Store takes some huge chunk of its revenue through that 30%, and investors don't want to see that go away. Apple doesn't want to see that go away. I'm not surprised that this is, a controversial issue for the people at the top of Apple, Timmy and the boys there. So I think the precedent's another important thing. Now, I do think, and I know we talked about this before, maybe you would know better than me since you're like close to the free open source and sideloading ecosystems. Isn't Apple being forced to add a sideloading option or like a secondary store option on their platform in Europe UK. Or in the UK? They are, right?
Before the
end of 2025. So that's coming. So what are they doing? It's like the last grasp here, because the outcome's already known there. So presumably they understand this as well. Are they going to try and tax stuff on that secondary app store? I don't know, but it's weird. Netflix, and it's yellow in the chat. Netflix forces you to subscribe on web to avoid the Apple tax. I had no idea that was true, but yeah, that's surprising. So even giants like Netflix, right? So who is it? It's only Fortnite that has stood their ground and won't let their stuff be played on Apple platforms.
Was it Facebook or Instagram go to war with Apple not too long ago and they lost?
I don't know.
It was some sort of, I seem to recall something like that.
Like if you buy something through an Instagram ad,
That's what it, or Facebook or something like that. And Apple wanted their cut of it, and it, they ended up getting their way because Facebook or Instagram or both, they don't want to get removed from the App Store because it's advantageous to remain there because such a wide audience that they're able to reach as a result. But I could be wrong. We can move on. And then we can go to Clown World News. There's lots to talk about over there. They're pretty deep in the show already. CBDC talk. And this is actually good because this Wednesday we'll be talking about CBDCs on the show. Tobias Adrian, he's one of the big wigs at the IMF. And he was mentioning that the IMF would like to implement a new platform powered by CBDCs to facilitate cross-border transactions. No mention of a retail CBDC, and I really don't know what role the IMF would play with when there's a domestic CBDC that's ultimately rolled out, but they want to have at least something along those CBDC along those lines for facilitating cross-border payments. And they said the IMF is, quote, working hard with implementing a global infrastructure, which would help different CBDCs work with each other. So if different countries have CBDCs, the IMF is going to be able to help make sure that they could communicate with each other. So that's very interesting news.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your help.
And they say they're working out the limitations with validator costs, security, efficiency, and privacy. And they're using this the excuse that it's going to help reduce the amount of anti-money laundering or money laundering. This would help institute some anti-money laundering type things. And ultimately, this would be some sort of, I guess, global CBDC type situation. So very interesting stuff, because there's a lot of moving parts here. And if they're going to be able to have a lot of these domestic CBDCs communicate with each other, I don't know, man. This is getting into some scary, scary stuff here. And again, this is why I Bitcoin. But ultimately, the advent of Bitcoin helped push this. I don't think they would be doing this if Bitcoin wasn't in the equation. But with Bitcoin being here and showing that there is some competitor, they're forced to do something like this. It's not to say that a CBDC would try to attract Bitcoiners, but they have to try to advance what they have right now and make it an evolutionary step. And the next step would be digitizing everything to make it a CBDC 100% programmable. So yeah, the IMF, they're working very hard according to this, and that's some scary, scary stuff.
Do they think... I have a hard time believing that people under 30 won't understand all the downfalls of something like this intuitively, because they're raised in an environment where everything they do is tracked, monitored, and there's an awareness now about the downfalls of stuff like that. Currency is so important when it comes to, you know, something like market signals, for example. If you're censoring certain transactions, or people are self-censoring for fear of being censored or punished, you're really defeating capitalism and market signals in a way that's basically irreconcilable through other means. People need to be able to pay freely for things they find valuable. And part of the way they do that in an environment where certain things are frowned upon, pornography, weapons, strip clubs, whatever, drugs, booze, they pay cash. They might pay cash for that stuff. And so when I hear this, that's one thing I think, that you're kind of terminating market signals in a way that doesn't make sense and will cause problems, you know, second order effects, which obviously none of these guys care about or understand, or some combination of the two. The other thing I think about is, man, Bitcoin is pretty transparent, and wouldn't it be easier, Len, to just say coin mixers are illegal than it would be to roll out multiple, you know, narrow jurisdiction CBDC projects and have them communicate with each other and feign ignorance when you say, oh, well, we're working on the cost of validation and like everyone knows that's horseshit. So like the overall cost, both in terms of dollars and cents, and probably also in terms of reputation, is much less to just say coin mixing is illegal above a certain threshold, maybe, or whatever, right? I don't know what the rules would be, but don't you think that makes more sense for them to do that? I'm surprised they're not going that direction.
Maybe I haven't like, put much like, thought into this.
I just don't know. Like I don't get why they would do it any other way. People are walking by, looking at me, waving my arms around in my kitchen. This kid's crazy.
They're not watching or listening in. What the frick?
It's just bizarre to me that they would go this direction, because to me it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like there's already rational reasons in the mind of the average person why coin mixing should be against the law. So why not just push on that a little bit more? And before you know it, you have some legislation. Okay, Bitcoin is legal. There's an ETF, but no coin mixing. We want to know where the tokens are. It's good for crime, good for money laundering, good for terrorism, whatever, right? We know all this stuff. So to me, that makes the most sense. Again, I almost want to say that the incompetence is like so great and the money so free that they just don't care how they spend their reputation or their cash figuring all this out. That seems to me to be the only way that they would ever go this direction. And it's not the first time. They do this in every endeavor that they pursue.
This one, unfortunately, it's going to have drastic implications in our life, because there's going to be a lot of privacy lost as a result of using a CBDC. And then they could, because it's 100% programmable, you could be at the whim of whoever's programming that. And I don't know.
People still don't understand that. When you talk to people about programmable money or interest rates that are tweakable down to the individual, people don't care. They still like their eyes glaze over, even though it should be obvious how dangerous this stuff is. They just don't get it. Sometimes I get frustrated because I don't know how to make people understand. They won't get it until it's too late, I think, in some cases, which sucks.
And at that point, it's fully implemented. But the only saving grace here is that a retail CBDC is still, in my humble opinion, very, very far away. We're not going to see it for years, if not longer. So that's the only saving grace here. So there's opportunities to still buy Bitcoin, because who knows, if there's ever a CBDC that is in play, maybe you don't have the opportunity to use the CBDC to buy Bitcoin because they would prevent any transactions with any exchanges. So still an opportunity for people to stack.
Did we not talk about FedNow and the video that was put out last week? I think it was on last week's show. Man, time is like all blending in together here for me. During the video, I was about to start saying in French there. During the video, there's like a maybe 30-second segment where they talk about the retail aspects and how it'll be easier for payments and transactional stuff at the retail level. I think FedNow, there's a lot of people in Bitcoin who are saying FedNow is nothing to worry about. I think FedNow is something to worry about. I think it's definitely, at the very least, the beginning of a CBDC implementation that might be a lot closer than me or you want to believe.
I think technically it's nowhere near a CBDC. So it's just, again, it's another revolutionary step. And then maybe that would be one step closer to getting to a CBDC, but there's no direct linkage between the two. Isn't that more for just institutions to...
That's what they say. That's like the first layer. But like, I mean, Len, if you had to guess, you know, like what's stopping them from just building another retail layer on, like nothing is stopping them, right? Once everyone has kind of seen this, it's you know,
they need something that works.
Boomer's saying we should ask Natalie about it on Wednesday. Yeah, one of us will ask her. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. She might know.
Well, you need something that works, and it works very, very close to 100%. Look at all the times when you try to use your Interac card or a Visa card or whatever, and it doesn't even work because the system is down. Last year we had Rogers was down for some time, and a lot of people were just up in arms because whatever payment it just wasn't able to process. So that's an indication that if it fails once in a year, people are pissed off. So this thing has to work nearly 100% in order for people to adopt it, or else, if not the case, they're going to punish the people in charge. Whoever rolls out something that ultimately fails, even just a very, very small percentage, but more fails than what we have right now, they're going to, whoever's in charge, whoever's in power, they'll vote them out because, heck, you know, like they're fucking around with their money. So that's why if it's going to be rolled out, it's going to be rolled out and it works. They know it works. All the bugs are kinked out of the system. It just, there's nothing with it. There's no problems whatsoever.
This is famously, like to your point about redundancy, famously governments trade efficiency for security and redundancy to prevent the exact kind of outages you're talking about. So maybe that is several years away if that's the, if that's the avenue they're thinking of taking. I don't know. All this stuff. The one thing I laugh about sometimes when I listen back to the show and I'm doing the editing is 2 years ago, 3 years ago, before we started the show, even all this stuff was basically just conjecture, speculation, sort of like a dystopian nightmare that might come true, might not come true. And now here we are. Like, how many things were we wrong about? Almost nothing when it comes to like the control being exercised vis-a-vis the money in your pocket or in your FedNow account or whatever. It's all here, man. It's all on the doorstep.
Yeah. You know what? Let's move on. We'll talk about the UK because there's some funny stuff, sadly, for the people living there that's going on over there. And their PM, Rishi Sunak, was pounding the drums and how the UK is working hard with lowering the cost of living for its residents. And good for him for working very hard to do so. So there's going to be £150 issued for disability costs for living payment, £900 given out for impact of rising prices. There's going to be cost of living. Yeah, cost of chinching. Every time I say it, cost of living payment for 8 million households. They're going to be paying for half the energy bills. There's going to be a freeze on a duty for fuel and alcohol. And this is all paid for by wartime taxes.
Just get hammered, baby.
There's also the UBI pilot that's being rolled out just as we speak. And the whole thing.
What is the UBI? £1,600, right? That's what it is per month?
Sounds right. Yeah. $1,600, whatever it is. It's within that vicinity. A very small number of people are going to get it. But it's a basket case over there. And in fact, even with all these measures, the UK core inflation increased in May to 7.1%, and that is the highest since 1992. And even with all this, surprise, surprise, the Bank of England decided to raise the interest rates by 50 basis points. This is much higher than what was anticipated. Either they were expecting no raise or a 25 basis points increase. So 50 is very, very large to stomach. And interest rates now are the highest since 2008. And what's the result of all this? Well, obviously borrowing is going to be more and more expensive. mortgage borrowers are now going to be given the option to move to an interest-only mortgage or temporarily extend the length of their existing mortgage. And this, they say, will have no impact on their credit score. So people with a 25-year mortgage right now can transition to, say, a 40-year mortgage. No questions asked, no impact to their credit score. This is the ultimate kicking of the can down the road, because they're just trying to ensure that there is not a domino which falls, which is the housing market, and that would be crippling to their economy. And looking at all this and just reading the tea leaves, it's absolute insanity. In fact, the inflation is running so high for the government, they're considering to not increase the pay for the public workers over there, because that would push up the prices even further. So the people, doctors, teachers, police officers, maybe even military, they're all going to have to get stuck with whatever salary they are right now and just try to deal with rising costs. But with even with all this, Joey, we have a scapegoat. This is the beautiful thing. Incredible. And I'm not fucking kidding here. See, I'll have to go back. Tears of the Kingdom.
This is Zelda. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
You're different. By the way, you're not using that mic. It's on a different input. So Tears of the Kingdom, for those who are unaware, it's a game. It's a video game released by Nintendo, a Zelda game. It was released in May 2023. It's a sequel to The Breath of the Wild. And the official office that reports on inflation in the UK, this is the official people. I'm not bullshitting here. I'm not pulling shit out of my ass. They say part of the reason why prices are high in the UK for the month of May was because of recreation and culture. And they say that the increased rates was due to culture and good services. They rose overall by 6.8% in the year from May 2023, up 6.4% in April. So it's continually going up, and this is for recreation and culture. And the largest part of this came from the culture services, primarily admissions fees to live music events, games, toys, and hobbies, particularly computer games. And some people are even going as far to say that this is the Zelda effect, that having Zelda released in May is the reason why that inflation is going higher in the UK. Zelda, it's a character in a video game released by Nintendo. Zelda doesn't even have a fucking last name. And she was responsible for rugging the economy, a $3 trillion economy. This is incredible stuff. The level of, I didn't do this, let's blame something else. I'm telling you right now, next time I get blamed at work for doing something slowly, I'm going to just blame Zelda. Say, boss, I'm sorry. This shrine took me fucking hours to complete. Because of that, I couldn't do my job. And you know, he or she would tell me, no problem, employee, because I understand that Zelda is responsible for inflation in the UK, because people wanted to buy this shit and it's causing inflation to go up. So we have a scapegoat. And I can't believe people would fucking buy this. This is almost a no-coiner rant, but it's not quite. But how could you fucking say that it's not the monetary policies? It's not the fiscal.
Literally anything but the monetary policies.
It's a fucking video game that did it. Yeah. This is insane. This is straight from the fucking people, the people responsible for giving us this information, the UK government. How fucking dare they do this, man? Look in the mirror and say, we fucked up. Don't blame Zelda. Like, that's why I'm wearing a shirt. Don't blame fucking the video game character or the game. Like, this drives me absolute bonkers, Joey.
It should. A couple of good messages in the chat here. Start with Boomer. Zelda causing inflation in the UK and wood oven pizzas causing climate change in New York. True. Yellow saying Saifedean's daily posting of all the fiat blames for inflation are great. It is funny. Fiat economists will literally blame Beyonce and Taylor Swift before they look in the mirror and talk about monetary policy. Dude, the problem is that, like, when you list the number of payments that Dr. Professor Sunak is giving to all these people in the United Kingdom, all you see there is the UK trying to, quote unquote, break the back of inflation, as everyone likes to say, without anyone actually suffering from the policies that will be needed to bring inflation down. This is the problem, right? There's no willingness to just eat some of the loss, eat some of the pain. Everyone's got to be whole the entire time. There cannot be any losses. There cannot be any problems. There cannot be any pain. And the reason is because these politicians are so short-sighted. They need to win elections. They need to win votes. They need to, you know, appease their donors, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is that this is not sustainable. We know this. The UK is having more problems with this than almost any other country in the world. And who do they have to blame? Themselves for the monetary policy, for sure. But now also for the response to the problems that come with high inflation for a prolonged period of time. They refuse to admit defeat. And instead, they're just kicking the can down the road. And that crash, when it comes, man, when the pain comes, it is going to be so severe for these people that, you know, as Boomer's saying in the chat, he's doing what he can to avoid the guillotine. I know that's just, you know, a figure of speech, but it is true. You know, at what point, and actually Martin Armstrong Economics talks about this in some detail on his website and in his public appearances. The next step, really, if there is 8, 9, 10% unemployment, if there is 8, 9, 10% inflation, as rates have to come down to prevent, you know, complete catastrophe in global financial markets, the next step is people taking to the streets. So when you think about this, there really is some truth to that. You know, there's some modicum of truth to that. Yeah, these guys are doing what they can to avoid having, you know, riots in the streets of their countries. It's in my opinion, a fruitless exercise. They should just take the pain, lose an election, and go down in history as someone who did the right thing in a difficult time. And instead, they're going to do the exact opposite and try and get the news to cover it in a way that's favors them, and then write a book and go on tour. That's the standard operating procedure for these guys. Ridiculous, but expected.
But you overlook one point. They won't hit the streets. It's because they're too busy playing The Legend of Zelda. Also,
how many shrines have you unlocked? You must be playing a lot. Are you unlocking shrines, or are you doing the story?
Both. Well, we'll talk in the after show. Quite a lot of progress. And some department that hasn't really made a lot of progress was the Pentagon, because there was an accounting error. And to the tune of $3.2 billion, and apparently they overstated the value of the weapons that they were going to send to Ukraine, and the overstatement was $3.6 billion for this year and $2.6 billion for next year, for a grand total of $6.2 billion. So what do they do with this newfound money? Well, send it to Ukraine as well. So it was originally earmarked to go there, and they just, you know what, we found some more, let's send it over to them again. And just to FYI, they already sent over around $113 billion from what I can see here, but who's counting? Which is interesting that they would continually send money over there, because, you know, they have the crumbling bridges that's going on. Didn't we have something in Pennsylvania crumble not too long ago? Roads are fucking deteriorating. Airports are a disaster. You have these drugged out zombies. Every time I look at video footage of like Philadelphia, San Francisco, you see these people just like fucking zombies wandering the streets. And like, even student loan payments are going to be starting up in October. There's so many things that money could be redirected to, but you know what? The war efforts is top of mind. And you know what? There's not enough money to go around. And it's if there was, they wouldn't have all these problems I listed. They would send them enough money to correct these problems. But they decided the money they do have, well, another 6.2 to Ukraine, which I'm not going to say much more to it. It is what it is.
TJ, I'm in the chat saying it's immaterial. I happen to agree on the dollar amount, but on the principle of the matter, okay, that's where I take issue with this. Accounting errors for $6 billion in a time where everyone is, you know, finding it difficult to make ends meet, and then just sending that money over to the Ukraine for what is, at this point, even to the most strident supporter of Ukraine's war efforts, a losing endeavor in that region. It's a losing endeavor. Everyone can see this now, I think. There's this, you know, PSYOP, counteroffensive, whatever happened there for like a day on the weekend. And, you know, everyone was saying, oh, the war's over, Ukraine won. Like, no, guys, it's not how this works. It's much better in terms of, you know, deciding whether or not to send out that fiery tweet because you've been wrong for the last year. Just wait another day, wait another week, and everything will wash out the same way it was going before. It sucks, man. And like, again, you know, Luke Broyles pointed out in his presentation, I've heard other people say this too, in terms of like the financial problems and the wars and the, you know, God knows how many millions of lives lost over the last 50 years in these conflicts. Why keep sending that money over? There's so many problems in the United States now that, thanks to social media, are prevalent. You mentioned the, you know, the zombie, the daywalkers. the level of poverty, the theft. You know, we crack jokes about, you know, department store robberies like twice a month on this show. It's like it's just fodder for content creators at this point. It's fodder for memes. It's, you know, if it does fuel, I think, racial tensions as well, whether that's, you know, fair or not. It's a very precarious situation in the United States, and to continue sending that money overseas, I think, is, you know, the cost is going to be significant come election time, honestly, if nothing else. And I think that the Democrats are going to find that out the hard way in 2024.
It's so much money that's going to other programs. I don't know. I don't want to talk much more about the war. I would wish it just would end and everybody would declare peace and, you know, stop this fucking nonsense. But anyways, Clown World North. We should just move on to that. And just a couple of stories because we're getting late in the show.
I got one to add, I think, if you don't have it in here, but let's see.
Well, SIBA, we talked about this not too long ago, and it's getting more steam in the news. And we talked about it in April. We talked about it in May. And here we are in June. Now, once a month, we're talking about this. And this is nearly 900,000 businesses that were approved for a loan program, which distributed about $50 billion in loans. And the financial loans being offered were $60,000 or up to $60,000, all backed by the federal government. And the SIBA loans, they're interest-free up until the end of this year, December 31st, 2023. And if you pay that back, there is no principal repayment. There's no interest that you have to pay back. But if you don't, you're going to have to be dinged 5%. I believe that's the number. So if you don't pay it back, there's going to be interest charges on the loan, which is too bad. They're saying about 43% of small businesses don't have the money to repay their SIBA loans, 43%. And they expect as many as 250,000 businesses in Canada could risk closing their doors over this very issue. And they say that 9 out of 10 businesses have taken SIBA money and 78% have not made any repayments so far. That's a large number of repayments that need to be made. This is going to be a political issue. Expect this to potentially be extended past December 31st, because I don't think nobody wants to stomach having a lot of these businesses suffer any further and close shop. So there may be potential. This could be like one of the student loan payments in the States, where it's just continually just kick the can down the road and deal with it later on. When will it be dealt with? I don't know, but I don't think December 31st is going to be the date.
No, they'll be extending it. There's no way. The optics of that are pretty bad. That's historically when people are, you know, really pinching pennies after Christmas and the holidays and stuff like that. So I completely agree. The question is, you know, what's that money been used for instead? I think there was a report like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. We might have talked about it. I forget. But that even businesses like retail consumers, individuals are having this problem as well. But even businesses are dipping into their savings and putting more on credit and trying to, you know, kind of get by as the economy tightens up, as financial conditions tighten up and people think more about where they're spending their money. So I'm not sure how this is going to work. If the bank does in fact raise another, you know, 50 basis points before the end of the year, what's the plan for the businesses? The businesses are going to be suffering as much or more, you know, as the individuals are. So I'm with you. I don't think this is going to happen. You know, when is it going to kick back in? I don't know. The closer we get to an election, the less likely it kicks back in, right? Do you have a lot of faith, not to divert from Clown World North, but do you have a lot of faith that the student loan repayments will actually begin again in the fall in the States?
Yeah, that's a really good question. No, now I think about it. I think that they'll just continually kick that can down the road. It makes no sense for them to reinstate that right now.
Politically, yeah.
Even the money, like how much money are they going to collect? It's not going to be, oh, this is the one that's straw. If we leave it on the camel, that's going to make the camel's back. The camel's back broke a long time ago. The student loan payment, just delaying it any further, it's not going to make any difference in the end. It may help a little bit temporarily, but come on, man. Like, no, they'll kick that can down the road. That's it.
That's all. I just wanted to know. Because I'm with you. I totally agree. I think they're going to kick down the road for sure. It's kind of looming and it's closer and closer and doesn't seem to me like it's politically feasible at the very least. I think they're going to prolong it.
The Bank of Canada did their CBDC survey not too long ago. Over 85,000 submissions were sent in. They're currently reviewing that. They say they're going to be sending out their results shortly. 85,000 is a decent number. I wonder how many are repeats, same person doing multiples, or if there's bots involved or anything like that. But yeah, in my opinion, whatever they say, whatever people submitted in this survey or slash poll, it's probably going to be in one year, not the other for them. They're going to do what they want regardless of what these 85,000 people said. I'm not sure if you submitted a, I did. I certainly did. And yeah, you're nodding. You did it. So that's good. So yeah, good for everybody that did. At least you voiced your whatever support, displeasure, whatever it may be. This is democracy at work.
You know damn well that like 90% of the people who responded to that survey only even knew that survey was happening because they're into Bitcoin. So anything less than complete disapproval and destruction of the thesis and proposal will indicate the numbers are fudged. 100, like there's no doubt about this, I don't think. Do you disagree with that? I think that's no.
Who the hell is going to say, yeah, let's do this. This is a like, fucking nobody great I know. Thing.
If I'm at Line of Fortinos, I don't hear anyone saying like, oh, did you submit your thoughts about the CBDC proposal? Like, no, it's only on Bitcoin Twitter. So all these people hate the CBDC idea. That's all there is to it. So anything that's less than, okay, we'll back off. It was completely, you know, dismantled, destroyed, you know, left. We were left bombed out and depleted at the end of our commentary process. The numbers will be fudged. And I expect it. I expect the numbers to come back fudged 100%. Or they'll say we've heard your concerns and we're going to think about how to implement, and then they'll fucking do whatever they want anyway. What else is new? What else is new? It's always like this.
So I don't have anything. I mean, I do have one more story, but we're getting late. If you want to add another story that
I just want to hit one more. British Columbia today announcing they are going to abolish letter grades in schools. So I don't know, like Len, I don't know.
What are they doing in Ontario? They don't have that here. I don't recall my daughter getting.
I think they have percentages,
she does get A's and C's.
A's and C's. Yeah. So they're abolishing letter grades in schools in BC. I got to ask, what is the intended outcome here exactly? Are we doing this because some kids just can't perform? They're tired of getting D's every year. Like, what are they
replacing it with?
I didn't look. I got to read the article, honestly. But I saw the tweet just before the show while I was getting set up, and I just flew off.
Right now, there's A to E, right? I'm assuming there's still E. I mean, let's just assume there's still E there. What if they replaced it instead of A to E? They have three of them, like good, satisfactory, not so good, like something along those lines. It's kind of reducing it, but you're still getting, you know, maybe not as accurate a representation of what your kid is doing. It's trending in the wrong direction.
It's stupid. This is all stupid. It's all stupid. It's all dumb. Everything these people do is dumb. Everything I hear about new things going on in schools, whether it's, you know, questionable content, whether it's, you know,
oh, you're muted, buddy. Oh, no. We lost Joey in the middle of a rant. This is no good. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I can't read lips. He's now muted officially. Coming off.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. You're distant. I think this is better than nothing. Let's keep this.
The problem is this mic.
You're good.
Okay. I would just say that, like, all these things that I see in schools that have changed, and I'm not one of these, you know, get off my lawn guys, but dude, what positive changes are being affected in schools in Canada? Is there any? Is there any at all you can point to in the last 10 years? Be like, this is going to produce better results. This is going to produce more production in society when these kids are done their academic pipeline. There's not a single change.
Question I would ask, who was responsible for this change?
Who fucking knows? Who cares?
No,
the government's also ultimately responsible to say yes or no. And they said yes. What are these commies doing? Like, what are we doing, man? BC also the place where you can, you know, walk down any major street in Vancouver and see people completely strung out with no consequences, you know, lined up around the corner for God knows what kind of safe use options. Like, nothing these people have done has been successful, and they just keep fucking going. It's unbelievable, man. Unbelievable.
With that, let's transition to the Bitcoin or no-coiner section of the week, because I have one of each.
Got Taleb. If you haven't seen the Taleb interview with Aaron Sorkin. No, what's the guy's name? Andrew Ross Sorkin. Not Aaron Sorkin's a producer of some kind for TV shows. Andrew Ross Sorkin. and Joe Kernan. And both of those guys, you know, Aaron especially has been more, not anti-Bitcoin, but more hesitant to really get behind Bitcoin on CNBC. Even he's throwing his hands up in the air like, my man, it's been around for 14 years here. Like, it cannot be, you know.
He looked like a Bitcoiner for that, for 10 seconds. He was
he's like, what do you mean? So I was happy to see that, man. So good for them. You got to watch that Taleb interview. Saifedean has completely fried this guy over the years on Twitter many times. most recently talking about how Taleb doesn't even share his trades because the ones he shares are the ones he's most confident about. And even those ones, they just all suck. Like, he gets rocked on everything. You know, he's been short the market, short the S&P, short Bitcoin, blah, blah, blah. He's just getting crushed everywhere. So no corner of the week, Taleb. Easy, easy no corner of the week. Complete moron publicly. More and more just this old man yells at clouds type. Brutal to see. Especially after Anti-Fragile. People love that book. But yeah, I guess even a broken clock is right twice a day.
And he wrote the foreword to the Bitcoin Standard, at least a first copy.
That's crazy. I know. That's crazy. Yeah.
Boy, have the mightiest have fallen. But, well, I'll start with my Bitcoiner of the week, and it's Andrew Tate. And
Tate, top G. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
And the reason why I chose him, and I'll be perfectly honest, I have no idea what the heck's up with him. I don't know why he's being held in Romania, what charges. I know very little about him, but the reason why he's my Bitcoiner of the week is because of what happened this past week with him. Initially, it was reported that 21 million Bitcoin were seized from him, which would obviously be incredible, because I have some Bitcoin. I know you have some Bitcoin. So 21 million minus what we have, and I'm not sure we sold it to him. I certainly haven't, but it was revised to a lower number. It was some 18 Bitcoin in total was seized. And this is from both he and his brother. And the reason why he's my Bitcoiner of the week is because the reason why this was seized is his Bitcoin, some 18 in total between he and his brother, was held on Binance. It's a custodial exchange that it's easy for somebody to come in and swoop that up, seize it, and take it for their own. So examples like this, if somebody who has the means, like Mr. Tate, is still using these custodial exchanges and not taking advantage of all the applications that are available to us, like Cold Card or whatever, like that, along those lines. This is an example people should be looking at and what they should be doing. Don't rely on the exchanges. Don't leave your money on there. Don't allow it to be seized in any way, shape, or form. Keep the keys to yourself privately. Never have your XPub put out there. Use your own node when you connect your Sparrow wallet to your node, so you're keeping everything local. These are good examples. People should be looking at this and saying, yes, I should not be following their examples. I should be doing my own. I should be paving my own path. That is not what they're doing, but the opposite, because what they're doing is wrong. And this is another example. So that's why he's my Bitcoiner week, by simply getting a lot of the Bitcoin seized. Too bad for him.
Yeah.
But we could all learn from this. At least I hope we can.
For sure.
My no coiner of the week is actually, it's a bunch of people, and it stems from a news story that came out, and it reported about a spa in Brooklyn, and this spa is known as the Bathhouse, and it's apparently, it was reported that they actually reported, the Bathhouse did, that they were heating their pool waters with Bitcoin mining, sort of repurposing the heat to heat the spa over there to make sure that the water is hot and people could take advantage of it. This, to me, on the surface, seems like a good thing. You know, they're able to utilize the heat from the miners. You're going to be heating it anyway with electricity, so why not just use the miner to do it? But the responses from this news has been off the chart. The no coiners. I'm not sure if you've seen this, Joey.
I saw the pillow screaming. A lot of pillow screaming about this.
They're upset that people are using electricity for profits, and it's an undesirable use of electricity. It's electrons can be used this way, but no other way. Fuck, guys, they're using electricity to heat the pool. Now, in this case, they're using electricity to mine Bitcoin, and there's heat resulted from that, and just diverting that heat to the pool. It's the same thing. It's just, instead of just directly heating the pool, it's being done indirectly, but earning something at the same time. So the people up there, I'm going to just name them off. Anna Laranga, Camille Avendano, BJ Jacobs. That guy must be a baseball player playing catcher. L.A. Cat, NJ Malone, Josh Does My Hair. People must do more than that if looking at that picture. Kid Calix, and so many other people, all of them, they are my fucking no coin of the week, complaining about why electricity is being used to heat the pools that they taking advantage of in the spot. Like, you fucking hipsters, come on, man. It's not electrons like this. Everybody has access to these electrons. If I want to plug in whatever I want in my fucking socket here, I could do that. As long as it's within the confines of my house and I'm being the laws, they are doing the exact same thing. So, man, fuck you all, man. You're all no-coiners of the week, and you're going to all have fun staying poor.
Energy conservation as a movement is about making sure that energy is only used for things that you are okay with, not actually conserving energy, because this is obviously a great way to use energy, right? You're doing so in a way that makes sense for your business. You're making a little money doing it and incentivizes further build out in that realm. But these people don't care. They never built anything. They're losers. They don't understand Bitcoin. They don't understand mining. And as I, you know, like to call them, they just scream into their pillow all day, every day, and let them, fuck them, cry harder, right? That's what we say, cry harder.
Yeah, safe always says that, cry harder. Yeah, this cry harder. It's very prevalent. It's very, very true, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That was a good episode.
Yeah, very. What's the price of Bitcoin here? It's
we went up.
30,275. Nice, nice, nice. Very nice.
39,844, just below the 40K threshold in Canadian dollars. We're very, very close. We were there for some time, but no longer.
We're cooking, man. We're cooking. So I'll be back tomorrow with Luke at 9 Eastern. So if you're one of these guys who wants us to start the show later because you got kids or whatever, tomorrow's your lucky day. We'll probably do 40 minutes or so on the case for Bitcoin, which everyone knows that he's all about. And then Wednesday, are you going to do Natalie or am I going to do Natalie?
Either one. I'm fine either way.
I gotta see what else develops here in my personal life, because that'll probably be when I'm starting to show my house. So maybe it's better you do that one. And then Thursday, if I have time, Frank Holmes, we'll try and get him on sometime during the day. Maybe, no guarantees on that. And then, yeah, man, God bless. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, take care, PV, and don't be a cuck.
126.
Oh, we lost Joey. Oh, he'll be coming back in a minute, hopefully. If not, I'll be talking about my adventures in Zelda. Joey, where did you go, man?
I'm having a heck of a time here, man. This is driving me. I hate having this thing in my fucking hand. It drives me insane. My arms are sore holding this thing. I'm clicking around my mouse the wrong way all the time.
At least you didn't rug the whole broadcast. Jeez,
I know. Like,
I'll have to give you credit there. Like, if you're going to make a mistake, that's a decent mistake to make because you could rectify it. But I'm going to go back to, we're talking about Tears of the Kingdom. I got almost all the shrines located, and I've done a ton of shrines. I must have 12 or so hearts and max stamina. So
I got max stamina wheel. I only have like 7 or 8 hearts, though.
Okay. And yeah. I've completed the whole underworld. I've mapped it all out in totality, except for one spot.
You are sick. You are sick in the head. That's fucked. I can't stand playing down there. I can't fucking stand it.
You figure it out after a while what's the pattern. And it's, once it clicked in, it's like, holy fuck. And I don't want to say it, but it took a little while to figure it out. And once it did, it's like, this is dead simple now. So there's just one place I have to go to, like literally one like little dot. And I don't know how to get there. I've tried so fucking hard, so long to do it. And I would be finishing the whole map of the underworld. And at the top, I've done most of everything. Like I've reached most of the upper world too. I got to the castle, Zelda's castle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mapped almost all the whole game, and it's I'm doing a lot of story. I'm just trying to do the side quests and the shrine quests mostly.
Yeah,
I've only completed two of the main quests.
I gotta play more of it. Honestly, I've been playing so much Diablo 4. Funny story. I was playing Diablo 4 on Saturday night. No, it wasn't Saturday night. It was Friday night. And I was sitting here at the table, actually, and some guy messages me and starts calling me JT, which no one really calls me unless they know me from when I was a little younger. And I asked the guy, I'm like, dude, I got to be honest with you. Like, I don't know how I know you. And he goes, man, we met at a bar.
On Twitter, Joey tweets.
No, we met at a bar in Waterloo back in the day. He's like, we were like going after the same girl and ended up like talking about Diablo 3, and I couldn't remember. And so he's like, yeah man, I'm still playing. He's like, I got a kid now and whatever. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, talk about like kindred spirits, eh? Like you still see these people 10 years later just having a good time online playing a little Diablo on a Friday night.
I haven't bought Diablo 4, and you know, when I do, it's going to be when it's on sale.
It's a great game.
I hear that.
The one of the things I always have a problem with playing Diablo is that I don't get into it enough to have like a competent build for the, I don't know what you call it, like the post game stuff, like the stuff that you do after you finish the main story. And so this time I do want to spend some time like watching videos and learning how to do the builds properly. That's one thing I've been meaning to do, but I just don't have that much time. Like with the house for sale and Scoop is kind of, you know, wandering around here. He's not doing that good, but you know, all that stuff is going on and taking priority. And the other thing I don't understand, this is maybe just me, and I think you probably feel the same way. Why release a game right as summer is starting? That's when I play video games the least. You know, I would have played this a lot more if it came out in like October or November, but I guess they don't care for the holiday money, don't care for the use. Like the user base is probably crazy anyways, but I was surprised that they released it in the summer. Even Zelda, like Zelda... Why not release it in the fall? I don't get that.
No. That it makes for them, it makes sense to release it in May because the people that are gonna buy it, we're gonna buy it regardless of when it gets released. Now they're gonna have those people buy it, which are a ton, and come holidays, they're gonna get the holiday come in. If they release it at a holiday,
you're making a great point too. We're showing our age here. It's the kids on summer vacation. Fuck, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. About summer vacation. But remember, Breath of the Wild was released in March. Now that came out in March 2017. That was released at the same time the Switch was released. So maybe that's the reason why. But May and March is relatively close in the calendar. And Breath of the Wild was just a success with sales, and in terms of the gameplay, it was fantastic too. So
yeah.
So it makes sense to release it in May. So yeah. It was a May release for Diablo, wasn't it, or June?
It was May.
It's crazy that two games came out so close to each other.
I think May. Now I don't know. I gotta look here.
Even June. How long was it? May 12th. May 12th was Zelda.
Oh, Zelda.
Friday. Yeah. It was at midnight.
June 6th. Diablo came out June 6th. Yeah, it was a June release.
Less than a month.
It's like it's quite a quite a game. I have enjoyed it very much. My brother plays too. It's always good to play with my brother, so I don't see him as much as I'd like to. So yeah, that's
cross platform, right?
Yeah, he's got it on. I think he's got it on PS5. He's got a PS5. Yeah, that's another thing about moving. Like none of my stuff is here. The router that everyone in this chat was harping on me to get, you included, is hooked up, sitting under the couch. It's amazing. Like the first time someone comes and wants to see this place, probably like I said, tomorrow or Wednesday, it's going to be like a frenzy here. My wife is going to go absolutely bonkers for sure. She's going to be like, we got to clean up. We got to do this. Got to do that. I'm going to be like, well, okay. I guess.
Please sell it fast so you don't have to go through this whole ordeal. Oh, dude.
We fucking better. I gotta get out of here. I'm looking forward to moving to Dundas. It's our new house is really nice. You and your wife should come over there. We should do a, we'll do an in-person show and stream it like I did with Green Candle and Mark at the conference.
Dundas, because when I go on a 403 heading towards Brantford, mm-hmm. and I pass by Chidoak, because I played there many times, and just passing it, you keep going up the mountain, and to the right, there's like the hydro lines going down into that little pocket. That, is that Dundas?
Yeah, sort of. You know where we, where I still work and you used to work, if you get off at that exit, drive by where we work and turn left on the first main artery. You can take that main artery all the way into Dundas. There's only two ways to get there. One is on
pass by
the
Children's Hospital.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And stay on the right hand side on Coots. Take Coots Paradise, and that's where that's how you get there.
I've been there. Okay, very nice area. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, let's do a live show, man. Let's go back to our roots.
I'm gonna buy some proper lights and set up a proper podcast room. I can't wait to do that. That's one thing I'm really excited about because I've been looking at all these other shows. I gotta talk to Max Gagliardi and find out what he's using for lighting and all that. Also, he looks directly into the camera when he does the show, which used to creep me out a little bit. And now I'm kind of like, I want to do something similar. Like I want to have the camera almost where I'm looking for the screen, the chat, like the research or whatever. Like I want to see it all and make it look like I'm looking into the camera too, which would be cool. Might be a little expensive, but I think it might be worth it. I might see how much all this stuff costs.
Do it.
Yeah.
Man, let's do it. Show improvements, people. We want to see it, right?
Of course. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Let's do, anyway, let's do an outdoor show.
I would do that. I would get the mics for it. We can do it.
Let's do a campfire.
We'll do one at Shed Oak. We'll do one on the golf cart.
Oh, that'd be mint. I'm down. Yeah,
that'd be cool.
Yeah. You know, I played there twice.
How was it?
No, I'm just saying the price. I played there twice, different times, $9 with a cart, 18 holes.
Would you use Golf Now?
Golf Now. Typically, we paid $21 to walk it, and that's just a regular rate from the price we have. But that $9 with the cart was the best price I ever got.
And
it was,
sure.
And I got it twice. It was like freaking incredible.
But you got to basically book that like the morning of, right?
If the Golf Now, the $21 deal, we get it a week beforehand. So,
right. Okay.
Still the best deal. I prefer that playing there.
It's good. No doubt. Yeah. No doubt. Yeah, it's a good deal. Okay, I gotta run. My little buddy here is looking for a walk because this is around the time we usually go. So
still got daylight.
You know, I'll take him. God bless everyone. We'll see you tomorrow. Me and Luke. Make sure you show up. If you got questions, you want to hear us talk about something, let me know. I'll pitch to him. No problem. And until then, take care of yourselves.
Yeah, take care of PV and don't be a cuck.
Nice new sign off.